Expanding recommended uniform newborn screening panel.
Aloha. Good morning. I'm glad that the meeting's in San Francisco because in my world, this is the center of the country, not Chicago. So when I was looking at the program, I thought, well, how interesting that my talk is put into personalized medicine. And I thought, well, this is kind of getting more into what I'm dealing with. Right, I'm going to talk about community participation in expanding our newborn screening, but of course one of the things that is in the back of our minds that we're starting a project on soon is we're going to be using the same format to look at how our community feels about doing whole genome sequencing for newborn screening, because the price of whole genome sequencing is falling so rapidly that I think that it might be more cost effective to actually just do whole genome sequencing. Not mentioning the ethical, legal, and social issues with that. So I'm Sylvia Al, and I am the State Genetics Coordinator at the Hawaii Department of Health. I am one of, I think in the country, there are 7 people that actually work in health departments that have any training in genetics. So I'm very grateful for my state for actually believing that genetics is important and having people that work in genetics in our health department. I have 4 genetic counselors that work with me in my program, so I have a lot of help. So it's not just me. I have nothing to disclose. I wish I did, but I'm a state employee, so no extra payment for anything. So for those of you who are not familiar with newborn screening has been done since the 1960s. Actually, next year will be the 50th anniversary of newborn screening, so it is a very significant milestone for newborn screening. They usually take a little blood from the baby's heel. We like it done at 24 hours or later, but sometimes it's done earlier, and it's put on a little piece of filter paper and sent to a laboratory for analysis. There's also newborn hearing screening that's done, and then there'll be this pulse oximetry screening that I'll be talking about later. States screen for at least 31 disorders. You might get confused when you look at the number of disorders that states claim they screen for, because some states will take one disorder and claim that all the variants are different disorders, and so they screen for 82 disorders or something like that, whereas other states are like, PKU is PKU. It doesn't really matter. We just call that one disorder. So that's why there's a discrepancy when you look at the tables of how many disorders a state screens for. Now, the state newborn screening generally makes sure that babies receive screening, that any out-of-normal range results have follow-up to resolve why they have out-of-range results, and that newborns that have confirmed disorders actually get into treatment and management. Many newborn screening programs are funded by user fees, so only people having babies actually will pay for the newborn screening program. The fees range, depending on those states, from a low of $35 to, I think, the highest cost right now is, I believe it's one of the, it's either Alabama or Arkansas, and it's $154. And the things that the screening fee pays for differs depending on the state. Some pay for just the laboratory testing. Some pay for the whole gamut from the laboratory testing all the way to diagnostic testing and even treatment and follow-up. Some states use a combination of state general funds and their maternal child health Title V block funds for newborn screening. So, under Title 26 of the Children's Health Care Act of 2000, Congress actually approved this act, and then then 4 years later, they approved funding to implement this act, and they created a Secretary's Advisory Committee on Heritable Disorders in Newborns and Children. And then the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Act of 2007 reauthorized this Federal Advisory Committee. And why is this committee important? They used to have a longer name than this, but I think that this is their current name. Their meetings are held 3 times a year. There is a website there if you want to look at meetings or materials or minutes or when they're having their next meeting. Their next meeting is actually at the end of January, and it's going to be by telephone because I think the last time they tried to have the meeting at the end of January in Washington, it was snowed in and no one could get to the meeting. So I think they've gotten a little bit smarter. So the Secretary's Advisory Committee has a lot of things they're actually tasked to do, but one of the things they're tasked to do is review conditions that are nominated and look at the evidence and make decisions on whether or not they should recommend to the Secretary of Health and Human Services that that disorder be put on a national panel. And that leads us to this national panel, which is called the Recommended Uniform Screening Panel, or RUSP. This never existed before this advisory committee was formed. States mandated their own disorders, so that's why if you lived in one state and had a baby in that state and then moved to another state, your baby might be screened for a whole lot of different disorders. So your first child could be screened for something, and then your second child screened for a second set of disorders, and your third child, if you moved to a third state, is screened for a third set of disorders. So they thought they were trying to do this so that states could have a more uniform screening panel that every state should at least have as their minimum. So what this has caused is that every time the secretary puts a disorder on this list, it creates what the states consider is an unfunded federal mandate, because the programs are mandated at the state level. But once it comes on this federal list, if your state doesn't do something to screen for it or have some good reason why you're not screening for it, you're probably going to get sued if a family actually has a child with this disorder that wasn't detected in the newborn period. So you can see why there's a kind of a tension between the federal government and the state government in this area. So in 2010, the advisory committee reviewed critical congenital heart defects. Now, our cardiologists in our state hate that it's been called critical congenital heart defects because they say that it's been dummied down. And I'm getting emails like crazy on this because it's really cyanotic congenital heart defects that we're screening for. But we will use the term that the Secretary's Advisory Committee has called this, CCHD. They added the CCHD to the recommendation of the Secretary in 2010, and the Secretary put it on the RUSP in September of 2011. So what are these critical congenital heart defects? Well, they're structural heart defects that are associated with hypoxia among infants during the newborn period. And infants with CCHD are at risk for significant morbidity and mortality. They had parents that came to the Secretary's Advisory Committee telling stories of going home with perfectly looking babies that had pink cheeks and had gone through even their first and second pediatrician's visits. Nothing was detected, no murmurs, nothing. And the baby ended up either dying in its crib and they thought it was SIDS, or dying in mom's arms turning blue. So these were heart defects that couldn't have been detected just by looking at the baby in the nursery. So there are seven of these critical heart defects that actually have this hypoxia. And there are some other CCHDs that actually can be detected by the screening. So the good part is, after you detect a baby has these, once you do intervention, which is usually surgery, the babies do quite well. And as I said, without this screening, babies would be missed because there aren't any signs and they go home and they can end up dying suddenly. So the way they screen is they use pulse oximetry. Now this one is one that's used on the baby's foot. You can also do it on the baby's hand too. And it's the thing that you, if you've been in the hospital and they put something on your finger to measure the oxygen saturation rate in your blood, and that's what we're doing for the baby. If the baby has a low oxygen saturation rate, then there's something going on with that baby, and the baby never leaves medical care until they resolve what's going on. The doctors tell us that the majority of babies actually have something like an infection or other things like that rather than a heart defect, thank goodness. The National Children's Medical Center has told us that they detect about one baby out of every 1,000 or 2,000 that actually has a low oxygen saturation rate and then has to move on to more evaluation to see what's causing it. So, now you know the background of why we're looking at CCHD. So now I'm going to move into what we do in Hawaii. One of the good things in Hawaii is that we've had a state newborn screening program in the state since 1986. One of the bad things was that we were very slow in getting up to speed, and we were actually the last state in the country screening for two disorders until 1996, where we expanded to 7, and then when tandem mass spectrometry came in, we expanded to 32. Each expansion came with community engagement, and one of the reasons why we were slow to expand was we didn't have any money. And what happened in 95 was we actually went to the community and said, we really need to expand the program. We're the last in the country. We don't like it. We would like to charge a user fee. Would you support that? And the community said, oh, yeah, absolutely. And we went to legislature and we had families testifying. And so we were able to implement a user fee. Our current user fee is $55. We pay everything with that user fee, our education, our testing kits. We use Federal Express to Oregon, which is the state lab that won our contract to do the laboratory screening. We pay their lab fees. We do the repeat testing, the confirmatory testing. We have genetics consultants we pay. We test families without health insurance or out-of-hospital births who don't have and can't pay, and then we also have extra reserves to pay for implementation of new tests. So our program is totally self-sustaining. I think one of the things that got our legislature really jazzed was we explained that it's kind of like going to Costco to buy things instead of going to 7-Eleven if we were able to use the user fee and have the state actually contract for all these services. The funny part about our state is because we use FedEx, our samples get to the Oregon lab faster than the babies born in Oregon get to the Oregon lab. So for CCHD, we're very used to creating community task force because, as Toby Citrin always says, it's always nice to work with the community to implement programs while you're doing the implementation and planning rather than after you've planned everything and you bring them in. This is something that we do all the time, but the interesting part is when we had done our state genetics plan eons ago, we talked to our community, and they actually told us they really trust the health department, and any decision that we made, they felt that we were trustworthy and we wouldn't make decisions that would harm them. But we still felt that that's all and good, but we still want to do community consultation for whenever we implement anything with the community, especially since we do have the indigenous Native Hawaiian population and a lot of minority populations in our state to make sure that people have input and that people feel like we're doing what they want, and we want to feel like we're doing what they want. So we created a task force to look at CCHD, and we do this for every disorder. So we are actually in the midst of creating a task force to look at severe combined immunodeficiency implementation too. But this is the one that we're looking at right now. So in the task force, of course, we always have our public health people. We have our birthing facility administration, such as, you know, the chief of staff and legal counsel and all those people, our primary care providers, our nursery administrators and staff. For this disorder, we have pediatric cardiologists, since it's heart disorders we're screening for. We always have family members involved in our task force. We have community organizations. For this disorder, we have American Heart Association, March of Dimes, people like that. And then, of course, we have our third-party payers, because they're going to be paying the bill at some point. So we've had two meetings so far. I just finished our second meeting last week. of course, the task force has to consider things such as, should we actually screen for this? Because just because it's on the RUSP doesn't mean we really have to screen for it. We just have to have good justification why we're not screening for it. So when I get hauled in front of the judge in a lawsuit, I can actually explain what the community task force decided. Because sometimes in Hawaii, the disorder might not be something that is really prevalent. We took a very long time to implement CF screening because we don't have that many Caucasian people in Hawaii. And it was a very expensive thing to do. But we eventually did do it because the community said that we want to screen for CF. So we do want to know whether or not it is cost effective to actually screen for it in our state. We had to decide on whether we're going to do a standardized protocol, what the follow-up was going to be, what kind of policies we should have in place, what would be the impact to all the stakeholders, and how are we going to fund this additional screening. So for screening or not to screen, of course, one of the reasons is because it ended up on the RUSP, so that's why we're discussing it. Then the American Academy of Pediatrics came out in support of the Secretary's recommendation. So that was the second reason, because now our pediatricians have said, yes, our body has said this is a good thing. And it's a relatively simple and non-invasive test. We're not poking the baby anymore. We're not doing anything, collecting more blood or doing anything invasive. Reasons not to screen. Well, there's never enough time for staff to do all they need to do. It could add time to discharge, because if a baby screens positive or screens out of normal range for the first screening, you have to wait an hour and then screen again, and you have to wait an hour and screen again. So if a baby's having this done right before discharge, the baby's going to get discharged later until they resolve the screening results. There's additional costs for equipment and follow-up, of course. And then some facilities like Kaiser and our Army Medical Center said that they have not been surprised in the last 6 years with any baby born with a heart defect, because in their facilities, it's mandatory that all pregnant women under their care receive a second ultrasound at 20-plus weeks to look carefully at the heart, and they've been able to detect all the heart defects, and they gave all the credit to their maternal fetal medicine people, saying that they're really good at their ultrasound. So we really trust their work, and because we have this mandatory second ultrasound, we've been really lucky. So when we looked at protocol, of course, we looked at Alex Kemper had published this protocol in pediatrics for CCHD screening. So that is, we call it the American Academy of Pediatrics protocol. So we looked at that, and we're tweaking that as a protocol. So we had something to start off with. So all the different people on the task force were looking to see whether this protocol would fit what we're doing. We looked at follow-up. Of course, on our in our state, we're separated by the Pacific Ocean. We do not have ferries. We do not have boats. We have airplanes that go between the islands. We have all our pediatric cardiologists located in Honolulu, except for one, who's located on the Big Island of Hawaii. We have no pediatric cardiac surgeon at all in our state. All our babies that need heart surgery, including our military babies, all go to San Diego. Which was surprising. That was something I didn't know. They all go to San Diego, which is good because coordination would be easier. We also found out that with our Pacific Basin telehealth program, we actually could do teleechocardiograms from the neighbor islands, and we're investigating that more right now. We have an air ambulance that goes and transports babies from the neighbor islands to Honolulu or to the mainland. It is very, very expensive. I'm told that from Honolulu to San Diego, the air ambulance bill is $50,000. So it isn't a cheap ride. So we had to look at policies, because this type of point of care screening, which we call it because it's at the point of care in the nursery, is different from all the other types of newborn screening we have. If the baby has an out of normal range result, they never leave the hospital. They have to have medical care until they figure out what's going on with the baby. So the state is used to trying to get families back and doing other screening and making sure that the baby doesn't have something. Well, the baby never leaves the hospital or never leaves medical care. So this is a very different situation. So different policies need to be in place. There's different responsibilities for people because the specialists and the primary care providers and the birthing facilities are taking more of this as a clinical role, whereas the health department is taking more of an oversight quality assurance role. So we decided in our state that we probably needed new legislation to actually clarify the roles and responsibility of this type of new point of care newborn screening, just to make sure everyone was clear on what we were doing. Then we needed to look at cost analysis, so we looked at how much the pulse oximeters cost and how much the probes cost. I had never knew that there were reusable probes and disposable probes, and it's very weird because when we priced it out, the reusable probes actually cost more than the disposable probes. So I just didn't get that. I guess someone told me it's like buying a printer. The printer's really cheap, but it's the ink that costs a lot, so I guess the probes cost a lot. We have to pay for staff time to do the screening, specialist time, of course, to follow up the out-of-normal range results, the diagnostic tests like the echocardiograms that would have to be done. We have to have time to do the tracking, education, quality assurance, and of course the family time and resources that are used during the screening and follow-up. So for our state public health role, of course, we're looking at what kind of policies we have to change. We have our education that we'll have to create and do. We have our quality assurance role. Do we regulate that all hospitals use the same machine, use the same probe, use the same procedure, do the same follow-up? How do we make sure that neighbor island babies are getting the same screening as the Honolulu babies? Also the tracking. We're going to have to figure out how to track these babies to make sure they get screening. How are we going to get that information from the hospitals? So I just talked about that, about the impact on our public health. Also, if we're developing tele-echocardiogram services, we're going to have to make sure we have continuing education for the facilitators on the neighbor islands, because they're not going to have many babies that they're going to need to present to the cardiologist, but they're going to need continuing education so when they do have a baby that they need to do an echocardiogram on, they know how to do it on the baby. So on the providers, of course, they're going to need new policies and procedures, and the birthing facilities definitely have taken a lead in that. Purchase their own pulse oximeters and probes if they don't have them already. Train their nursing staff and other people that are testing, such as the midwives. We have a lot of out-of-hospital birth, and so we have midwives that help us with hearing screening, so we would have them help us with this pulse oximetry screening. We also have families that don't like going to hospitals or doctors, so we have some naturopaths that we work with too to do some of our screening. They would also have to figure out how they're going to get the information to the health department that they actually screen the baby. The impact on families, well, of course, it's another thing to think about after giving birth. Here's another test we're doing on your baby. It's going to be additional time for discharge if the newborn fails their screening test, and then definitely additional anxiety for those new parents when their child has a screening test that's out of normal range and more testing needs to be done. But then impact on everybody, as the task force told me, well, if we can prevent one child from dying from a critical heart defect that we could detect, then it's worth it for us because it's not that much trouble to actually do this and the baby is not going to suffer too badly. So I'd like to thank everyone, and in order to figure out what mahalo means, if you don't know it already, you have to come to Hawaii. It's on all our trash cans in Waikiki. It doesn't mean trash. Jennifer is a genetic counselor in my program, and Pauline's our administrative assistant. They're totally helpful with the task force, and Gwen Palmer is our newborn metabolic screening coordinator. And of course, our task force is wonderful and dedicated, and I am so lucky to work with people that are so passionate about what they do. So, thank you.